Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins. I'm the partner at Hugh James, who heads up the abuse team. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce to our listeners today Hugh Cock, who is the clinical psychologist and visiting professor in law and psychology at Birmingham City University. So thank you very much, Hugh, for joining us today in this podcast.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. And it was your suggestion that we discuss today in this podcast remote interview, which I think is very topical given the circumstances that we live in today with coronavirus and the implications of the lockdown and having to find new ways of working for those of us that can work. And I'm working from home as best as I can, and I'm having to confront the challenge. I think that's the right way of putting it. Confront the challenge of dealing with my cases remotely, which involves having to take part in court hearings, speaking to clients, witnesses, interviewing. So my whole world has sort of leaped into the 21st century in a big way with having to conduct conversations, court hearings in this revolutionary way. Well, certainly revolutionary for me. So nothing remote interviewing. I think you've got a particular slant on this because when we were thinking about what we're going to talk about when it comes to remote interviewing, I sort of highlighted what I thought were challenges. And I think you saw benefits as well as challenges and possibly new ways of learning and new ways of approaching the subjects that you and I have to deal with.
Well, yeah, as you say, it's been a huge change over the last, well, only 2 or 3 months. It seems like a lifetime. But before COVID landed, most of us, whether we were lawyers or expert witnesses, would have had experience of doing a very, very occasional remote interview, typically using Skype, with maybe a client or a claimant that was on the other side of the world. I remember doing one with somebody sitting in a hotel in Hong Kong because clearly they weren't going to visit my clinic in London. So we had experience of it, and because it was something that didn't happen very often, we tolerated the problems of getting a good signal, et cetera, et cetera. And usually the biggest problem was a sort of literally a transatlantic lag between the question and the answer. So at that stage, and I think I remember doing one of these maybe 2 years ago, it was a necessary evil, if you like, that we all knew was not going to happen very frequently. Since COVID landed and the face-to-face clinics disappeared temporarily, provisionally, there's been a big debate in, I think it must have been middle of March, between experts, lawyers, barristers, insurers, about the reliability and the validity of having these remote interviews. And jumping ahead 2 months, we're now probably running at maybe 40 to 50% of our regular expert work using remote interviews. So we've got over a certain hump of being able to do it. But what are the issues? As I've said, one of the main issues has been the practical, technical connectivity. The platforms that people have been using are Skype, FaceTime, WhatsApp, Zoom, and other less frequently used platforms. The ones I've mentioned all work in terms of providing there is a good, adequate internet signal, then those can all work. One or two of them, Skype in particular, is supposed to be more secure, whereas Zoom, although very effective, is less secure, apparently. this goes beyond my technical knowledge, but I'm repeating what I've been told. But all these are being used to reasonably good effect. And to be honest, when I started myself and my colleagues doing these remote interviews or considering it, I was fairly ambivalent to begin with about how the delay, how the visual side of it would work, especially in the field of psychology, where seeing the white of people's eyes literally is really important. However, I've been very pleasantly surprised that the psychology or psychiatry skills of, you know, listening, being empathic, watching the client, trying to interpret what they're saying, has largely been very, very straightforward. Except for one example, which I'll come up with personally, the transition to these remote interviews has been really good. The one example, which probably says more about me than the technology, was I recently saw somebody, and the video aspect of the remote interview typically covers the top part of people's bodies. And you can get a very good sample of their verbal and nonverbal behavior by seeing half their body in the screen. However, if you get somebody who, for instance, has got an injury to their leg, their foot, their hand, their arm, it is relatively easy to miss the appearance of those limbs unless you specifically ask the person to stand up or show them the limb or whatever. So it is imperative that the interviewer makes sure that he or she covers all the various aspects visually, as well as making sure that you can understand what they say.
That's the nub, isn't it? Because my concern is that whether you're the physician, the psychologist, the psychiatrist, or the lawyer, you are going to miss something because
Yes. You
can't assume that the person that you're speaking to is going to be able to read your mind and do your job for you and say, oh, by the way, I've got scarring on my wrists or I've got scarring on my lower legs. And, you know, you use the expression, see the whites of each other's eyes, so to speak. Yeah.
Yes.
My concern is with this remote technology is that whilst it's absolutely wonderful and very clever and so on, when it comes to dealing with human beings and what makes them tick, who they are and so on, working remotely means exactly that. You are working remotely and you can so easily miss something. And also, it's not just the visual thing. It's unconscious of using my ears. I'm listening acutely in this podcast. I'm listening very carefully to what you're saying, but also in other settings, whether it's the court hearing or whether it's the interview with the witness or the client, I am conscious that perhaps I'm overusing my hearing capacity. Whereas if I was in the room with the client, I'll be using all my other senses, temperature.
I totally understand that, but I think I've raised this quandary, if you like, in order to raise the confidence in the process that a good interviewer, whether it be a lawyer, barrister, judge, expert witness, taking this into account, can use their skills to cover all these bases. And although I gave that one example of one of my cases, I was able during the interview to get on top of this question mark and sort it out. And to my knowledge, obviously other people can tell me, but to my knowledge, there have been no other similar problems of unreliability that would make me concerned. I personally would prefer doing face-to-face. I prefer myself. However, the issues of reliability and validity are managed so well, surprisingly so well, that in most circumstances, it really works. The other aspect, of course, being a psychologist, if the psychologist is involved with doing some form of psychometric testing, personality testing, IQ testing, or in extremis, neuropsychological testing, that then becomes a much more complicated circumstance doing it remotely. again, I think the very good expert can do it, but I think the level of skill needed and the level of, if you like, connectivity and ability to communicate with clients is tested quite significantly when issues of testing have to be done.
So yes, I think in summary, we're all having to fine-tune skills that we've already had, fine-tune skills that perhaps we didn't know that we had, and developing new ones.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But I mean, the jury is going to be out, to use an appropriate phrase, maybe. It'll be very interesting to see when we get back to the possibility of face-to-face interviewing, which may well be, let's say, July, August time, as to how much of remote interviewing people, as in lawyers, insurers, experts, claimants, actually elect to do given the choice. And as I say, I have a much more positive view than I did back in February and March, but we shall see.
Yes, and I think so. It's talking to clients who've been through the process of being examined by a psychologist or a psychiatrist remotely. Some, you know, they really rate it. That, you know, it's been very positive feedback. Whereas for others, it has been a more difficult, torturous process. So I think myself, going forward, there will be occasions when, yes, it's a no-brainer to work remotely because that is what the clinician wants, that's what the client wants. But then there'll be other occasions when, no, you do need that face-to-face meeting.
And just listening to the way you were saying that, Alan, I think that there, in some ways there are two sorts of clients. Some clients come wanting really to use the opportunity to divest them of a lot of emotional bits and pieces, require a lot of time and a lot of attention, quite rightly. And possibly those types of clients will prefer the face-to-face interview. The ones that are seeing it as a more functional interview to get assessed reliably, maybe to get rehabilitation prescribed, et cetera, may well say, well, no, this is another aspect of being very functional and efficient, and I'm very happy not to have to go to the trouble of travelling to a clinic. So we shall see. It'll be horses for courses.
Very interesting. Thank you very much, Hugh. Thank you very much, podcast listeners. And please do tune in to forthcoming podcast, and I will be speaking to Hugh again. So please do join us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favourite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.